How's it going, everybody? Brent Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here, Wrestling Observer Radio, July 28, 2026, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We got a lot to talk about today.
Do we?
Well, we got a long-ass pay-per-view again.
I
told you he was going to move it an hour early and still end after midnight.
It didn't end after midnight.
It ended at like 11:59. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he went. It was a long show.
10 matches on the main show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He actually, the press conference said that he booked less matches. But he was talking for those of you that actually watched the pre-show, he booked more matches on the pay-per-view.
Yeah, he actually booked 11 instead of 13 or 14, which is the usual. So yeah, he did book less matches.
No, but on the pay-per-view.
The pay-per-view.
This was more matches.
Yeah, yes. But it was for the night. It was shorter.
I mean, most people are not watching the pre-show. I think most people watch the pay-per-view.
Well, the thing also is that he started it a half hour later on as far as the pre-show went, because he was doing a lot of interviews and pre-thing and everything like that. I mean, they only had one match on the pre-show, which was the trios title match. So it was. It was still a long show, without a doubt. You know, it's always going to be. I mean, I think that's just the deal. It's always going to be a long show, and it was. But, and it's always going to be a show filled with good matches, and it was.
I would not say this was one of their best pay-per-views. In fact, I would say two matches were bad. One was very bad.
My world match wasn't good. Yeah.
That's the one you came up with?
Wait, what match did you think was
bad? The chain match.
Chain match wasn't much either. No, the Maya World match is the one running away with worst match.
Oh, running my away. God. What were they watching? That chain match was horrible. Dude, Jay White almost got killed because they tripped on the fucking chain.
Yeah.
They were getting wrapped up in the chain.
They were getting wrapped up in the chain a lot.
They were tangled up. They were like, crowd was dead. Oh, guy almost got killed. Oh, my God. That was the one. That's got my vote for worst match. That was horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there were very good matches. A lot of them was exactly what you would expect. The Young Bucks won to set up the match with Edge and Christian, which apparently is only a one-on-one match, one-on-one tag.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Unless they add people. Well, they have the graphic up and everything. So,
they're not going to. If it was going to be different, it wouldn't be announced now.
Well, it looks like it's going to be just a tag match.
That's fine, too. They have plenty of. You know, I mean, the one thing is that they've got. You know, I mean. To me, the ultimate match is a three-way and maybe even a four-way with the New Day down the line in a ladder match. And they got a ways to go before they, you know, it's not like they have to end it at Wembley. It's like Wembley's actually the beginning of it. So there's nothing wrong with that. It stretches it out longer. And, you know, it's the first match ever with the Young Bucks against Copeland and Christian. So that's, I mean, it should be a big match. But I thought Kyle Fletcher and Bandido was a fantastic, fantastic match.
That was the best match on the show.
Yeah, the thing is that, like this is two super matches that I've seen in 2 weeks. The other one being the Shuri and Natsupoi match, and both of them, it's like when these people go out there to have, you know, match of the year, we're going to go out there and kill this thing. It's like. Once they set their mind to that, they do these things that actually, like, I mean, look, it doesn't detract from the match to the average person, so it's fine. But man, I could sure do without, you know, those headbutts and, you know, I mean, I think that more than anything. But there were several things in that match that really scared me, and not in a good way, and they weren't necessary. You know, I don't think it made the match better. I don't want to say it made it worse, because that's not fair to say. It made it worse to me, but that's not fair to say, because it's not like people stopped cheering or anything like that. But it's like that mentality of, like, we're going to go out there and have this incredible, incredible match drives you to do things that are, you know, not good long term. So I think that, like, you know, not everyone can be Zack Sabre Jr., you know, where you do these incredible matches and it's hard and you lose, you're out of breath and... You know, you do all kinds of innovative things and all that, but you're not like headbutting each other to death and trying to open each other's foreheads up with headbutts and things like that.
Well, let's go through the dark match or the pre-show match.
Yeah, so the thing, actually, let me just get to that, the undercard. So the first thing they did was the Russo ceremony. Let me get to my notes here. So this was not what you would expect. So comes out, and it's Raymond and Jacques. So they were there representing the family, and Raymond spoke in French, and the people were with him and everything like that. He spoke so long in French that they kind of needed a translator, because so much of the audience watching does not speak French. And I don't speak French, but I mean, I was listening pretty close, and he was talking about it. It appeared to me he was talking about his father and his uncle, who were really the famous, you know, like in Quebec. I mean, the Rougeaus, you know, Jacques and Raymond, these two, you know, they were, you know, major territorial stars in the 80s, and they are famous in the culture and all that. But the real Rougeau stars, as far as, like, you know, I mean, the biggest Rougeau star is Johnny Rougeau, Jean Rougeau, because he was the guy in Canada after Edward Carpentier. So it'd be from like the 60s until the early 70s, during like this, you know, a real boom period in Montreal wrestling. And he was the guy, you know, he wasn't like the tag team underneath the guy. He was the guy, and he was the promoter, and, you know, Hall of Fame guy. And then Jacques Sr., who was famous because he was the most famous bouncer, tough guy reputation in town. He was like a boxer and all that. And so, you know, when Johnny Rougeau brought Jacques into pro wrestling, I mean, Jacques was an instant star there. And they, you know, Jacques and Johnny Rougeau against the Sheik and Abdullah, or Mad Dog and Baron Von Raschke, or Ivan Koloff, or, you know, that was a real, real, real big period. So anyway, I think Raymond didn't really talk much about it, but I definitely heard mentions of his father and his uncle. And then Jacques gets the mic, and they booed him out of the place. And there's people who are watching going, oh, you know, and then Jacques goes, you know, you can all kiss my ass. Oh, this is great. Mic work. And he's being a heel. And it's like, no, it's like, people don't like Jacques. I was afraid of this. People don't like Jacques anymore in Montreal because there's too many things. Just like the thing that just came out, what it was about a month or two ago, you know, when he was part of that show, and, you know, he promised the wrestlers that they would be paid in American money, and then they go and get paid in Canadian money, which is worth a lot less. And, you know, he wants to book the whole, you know, Battle Royal Rumble match all around himself and things like that. And that's just, you know, most of the independent wrestlers in that area, they're not fond of, they've heard the Jacques stories. They're not fond of Jacques. And I guess enough people in town are like that, because they booed him, and on this tribute night, he's telling them to kiss his ass. And, he's so great at being a heel. It's like, no, they just don't like him because he's, you know, he's had bad, but it's like, he was Hulk Hogan in Los Angeles. That's what it was. And, you know, I mean, it ended up with Rocky Romero going out there to save the day. And Rocky basically, you know, just, you know, he's out there actually going heel. And it ends up with them holding Rocky, and Raymond throws a kick. And, you know, it got over really big. It was fine. And they clotheslined him out of the ring. And, Rocky kind of saved the day, I'd say. I think that'd probably be the fair way to say it. But, you know, I mean, I wish Raymond, you know, Raymond knows English. I wish he had spoken some English. And I guess it would have been better for Jacques to have not been so hated. So there you go. Then they had the Trios Championship match, which was very good. It was Orange Cassidy, Roderick Strong, and Kyle O'Reilly against Blake Christian, Lee Johnson, and Jay Lethal. And, you know, I mean, it was all action. I mean, very, very good. You know, Blake Christian, obviously, like a great, great wrestler. And Orange Cassidy stuff, you know, when he did the hands in the pocket, it really did get over quite big. And Kyle, you know, not as much Kyle O'Reilly as I would have liked, but you know, that was the deal. They did the high-low on Jay Lethal, and then Roderick Strong did the end of Heartache, and what was the deal there? Orange Cassidy. Well, Roderick Strong threw Orange Cassidy on top for the pin. They retained the titles, and it sets up a match for, I believe, Wednesday with Cassidy and Strong and O'Reilly defending against The Demand. The Demand was out there. I mean, you knew that. I mean, even before this match started, you knew what was, you know, what was happening next, which was going to be those guys against The Demand, and that could be a title change. So that was the first match. That was the only match on the pre-show. And so you actually started a half hour, as far as the wrestling goes, a half hour later than usual. And when it was over, I mean, they had like 10 more minutes, it felt like, with Mick Foley and Jeff Jarrett and Renee kind of just building things up for, you know, in video packages and things like that. So it was less wrestling heavy early on. And then the show freaking starts with three freaking awesome matches in a row. And I think it really kind of peaked there, although the main event was also great. But those three matches to start the show were awesome. And then, you know, like in San Jose, it ended up being like they started with three awesome matches and ended up being a great show. This one, it was like after the three awesome matches, they really had a lot of people who couldn't follow it.
So it opened with a ladder match for the international title, number one contendership, Jack Perry, Nick Wayne, Mortos, Mike Bailey, Commander, and El Clone. And, I mean, it was a ladder match. Every crazy spot you can think of, dives and these guys ladder are crazy. Bumps. And
these guys are crazy. They did an all-out, you know, top-tier ladder match with very, very dangerous. Everybody was out, you know, these are guys who, you know, in most cases, are not going to be on pay-per-view a lot. I mean, as far as, you know, Mortos hasn't even been around for a while. He just actually got cleared, you know, his issues just got taken care of, and Commander, you know, is rarely going to be on a pay-per-view show match. And, Nick Wayne is rarely going to be in a pay-per-view match. El Clone is rarely going to be in a pay-per-view match. Mike Bailey could be. You know, and he was the most over by far. And he won, and it was the right choice to win. And but yeah, just all kinds of crazy.
We had destroyers off ladders on the ladder bridges. We had hurricane runners off the apron through tables. We had moonsaults off ladders on the stage, I might add, nowhere near the contract. And yeah, finally at the end, Mike Bailey climbs up, grabs contract, wins. I mean, the only criticism really of this match is the same thing Brian Danielson said when he was doing commentary the last time, which is, how come no one's trying to get the contract?
No kidding. They would be on top, and they actually would have been able. There was one spot where somebody was like flying in the air, right? And they could have grabbed the contract, but they just wanted to do their freaking dive, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, the worst was the very end, because they had a big spot at the end where everybody hits a big move. This is where Jack gave Nick a Destroyer off the ladder through a ladder bridge. And like everybody is down dead, and the crowd sees Speedball in the middle of the ring with a ladder, and they start going nuts because, oh my God, he's the only one left. He's going to climb up and win. And he literally takes the ladder and moves it to the corner. And like the announcers, they got to call the action. And even they're like, dude, climb! Yeah. But instead, he goes to the corner so he can put Mortos on a ladder bridge and hit the moonsault double knees. And then he goes over and climbs the ladder and gets the contract. So he will face Kyle Fletcher at the Arena Mexico show in a week.
Yeah, August 5th. The one spot, which was the spot you just mentioned, when he's doing that moonsault, like the Mortos is like right there. I was watching going like, how was he? I mean, he had to actually literally go straight up and down as opposed to the usual moonsault. I mean, it was actually really impressive because when the guy was so close, and I just thought, like, he can't moonsault because, you know, the guy's too close. And he went right up and right down perfect, you know. So there you go. A lot of talent, man. These guys, like, they did a lot of crazy stuff, but they hit it. And I mean, aside from the fact that they were not trying hard to win, and they were, you know, when you're watching it, you're going, they're trying very hard to do crazy things. But I mean, it you know, it wasn't like it was there any, you know, there was no catastrophes, and there easily could have been. These guys were, the guys in there, you know, like, again, you know, you had like Commander was just awesome. I mean, they all were. But yeah, I mean, just filled with great moves. Really, really a top-tier ladder match.
With the Young Bucks against Ospreay and Moxley, and we'll get the good news out of the way first. We had the obvious finish. We had the obvious person getting pinned for the finish. We had the obvious setup for the finish, and it made a match. So basically, it is the Young Bucks versus Ospreay and Moxley, and Ospreay and Moxley, near the end, have a spot where Ospreay goes for the phenomenal forearm, and he accidentally hits Moxley, and he lays him out, and the Young Bucks end up ultimately taking out Ospreay. They're alone in the ring with Moxley, give him a series of super kicks, the BT trigger.
Like 18 or something.
He gives him the double bird, so they super kick him again over and over again.
Actually, it was 12 super kicks.
And then they pin him with another super kick and get the win. So that obviously gives them the championship match at Wembley, which we'll get to. But really, the only thing that I didn't love about this match is they had an idea, and it played into the story, so that at least was good. But what happened was, Nick and Will Ospreay are doing a spot, and they clonk heads on accident. And they did it so well that at first, I thought they might have clonked heads, because Nick kind of goes down and Ospreay goes down, and then Ospreay starts to get up, but Nick doesn't get up. And the match just, like, stops as they try to figure out, you know, is Nick going to be okay? And this is all, it ends up, it's part of the match, but they worked it really well. So
it was incredible. I think almost everybody thought that they really clonked heads, and Nick was shaken up.
So Nick is like, he's kind of out of it, and then he rolls outside, and Matt gets in, and he's confused, like, what am I going to do without my brother? And so they do a couple spots, and then
it was really good.
He goes, well, I'm getting to this. He goes to tag in Nick, and Nick is still on the outside, and he's all groggy. And the only issue with this match is, where the hell is this doctor? Like, the doctor didn't care one bit about this guy. He never went over to check on him.
Yeah, you know, you're right.
He never went over to be like, you know, are you okay?
They should have sent the doctor out. You're right.
They just, and then Nick gets back in the ring, and he's like, he's groggy, and he's like, not able to do stuff. But
what a great sell job he did.
Well, sure, of course. And the story was, you know, Will Ospreay, he didn't want to kill this guy. But Moxley's like, get this guy's ass in the ring and beat him. And so that's where the first argument began. And then, of course, later, you know, they do everything at the end, and Nick survives. And, you know, for the rest of the show, Nick was fine. But I think the big thing in this match is, it's like, at least have the doctor check on the guy or something. Because, you know, you're trying to convince us that, like, the whole story is, literally, these were the words they used, I don't want to kill the guy.
Or he doesn't want to give him a concussion or hurt him or maim him.
I know, but the words Will Ospreay used was, I don't want to kill the guy.
Yeah.
But the doctor didn't care. But the story did lead to the issues at the end with Ospreay and Moxley. It led to a segment later in the show where, you know, Moxley goes up to the guy and he just basically goes, wow, Nick hurt his head. Welcome to wrestling. It happens to everybody. It's not an easy job. It's not ballet. You got to get in there and you got to pull the trigger because... And Ospreay even goes, why are you so mad? There was nothing on the line. It was just a throwaway match.
Right.
Moxley goes, well, this might have been a throwaway tag, but Wembley is not a throwaway match. It's the biggest match of your career. And
the wave only comes in, and you can't if you miss the wave, you know, like, it's like this is you may never get another wave like this. So, which actually, like, the way you said it was actually pretty clever.
Well, yeah, Moxley was right. You got to get in there and do this, dude.
I mean, that was what was amazing about it, in the sense that Ospreay is the one with the heart and trying to play babyface, but it was the heel, you know, if that's what it is, because they're.
Oh, he's definitely a heel.
Yeah, I mean, it's nebulous and everything like that, but I mean, the point is, he was the one, I mean, to everyone, he was the one who was making sense. Like, wait a minute. You know, it's like, you can't go out there and have a conscience. And it all played out by the end of the night, actually, very well. But as it was going on, you know, you're going like, what's this deal? How are they booking Will and all this? But by the end of the night, it's like, okay, it all makes sense now.
So then we had the Kyle Fletcher Bandido match, international title. This was the best match on the show.
This was like a match of the year. These two were incredible. They just went too far, but frickin', I mean, you know, Bandido, like everything he does is so perfect, and Kyle is amazing. Like, this is just, these guys are, you know, they're two of the best in the world, and this was both of them, like, at their absolute best. I mean, Bandido, if you give him, and then, you know, I think they went, how long did they go? 20?
Funny you should mention that.
They went 26 minutes.
26 minutes. This so one, I was fine with 26 minutes.
But, oh, it was a fantastic match.
I mean, yeah. One of the issues with this show was there were 10 matches on the show, and the shortest match was almost 17 minutes. And
yeah, they were all long.
Every other match was, you know, 20 to 28 minutes or whatever. And it was fine for, like, you know, this match should have been this long. The main event was exactly as long as it needed to be. Mm-hmm. And I think the Jericho match was the right amount of time, the Young Bucks match. But a lot of the other matches on this show, like Chain match, did not need to go 18, 20 minutes. The
17.
Maya World match did not need to go 18, 20 minutes.
Agreed on that one for sure. They went too long.
Tekla match didn't need to go 18, 20 minutes. I mean, there were a lot of them where...
I like the Tekla match a lot.
It's so. Okay for a match to sometimes go 12.
Yeah, that was 16. I you know, and they were changing the world title. I thought that was actually quite good.
But yes, they actually, the other thing about this match is they actually botched the finish of all things. They went for the turnbuckle brainbuster.
And he missed the turnbuckle.
He just like completely missed. And I was actually happy because like whoever he hit the last one on, he just freaking spiked him on that top turnbuckle.
Takeshita.
I think it was, it's Takeshita. So I was actually happy with the guy not being spiked and almost killed, but he completely missed it. And the announcers were like, he missed it. And then he covered him and pinned him. So I think they figured they would like do another spot because they missed it. Because most guys do. Yeah. And I'm not an advocate of that, by the way. I hate when you botch a spot and then you just repeat it.
Go
to
right
let
back
the
to
world
the
know you just fucked everything up and you're going to do a redo. Yeah. But he just covered him and pinned him.
I had the impression, because it was missed, that everybody was expecting Bandido to kick out for that reason. And I think that maybe he's just like, it's good enough for me.
It was good enough for me.
And I mean, you know what? It was fine. I was absolutely fine with it as a finish, but yeah. You know, I mean, they exhausted everything in their freaking arsenal. And other than Bandido didn't do the deadlift 21 plex. That's like the one move. He set it up at one point, but they never really got there. But he did some unbelievable stuff, including a Cavernario, you know, spot where you do the full body splash from the top rope to the floor, which is just hell on your knees. And it's like that one when he was up there and it's like you're you know. I was thinking, like, Kyle, get up and do the crossbody, which is a million times safer. And Kyle's not getting up. And I go, he's doing the Cavernario. And it's like, dude, you don't want to ruin your knees. Dynamite Kid blew out two kneecaps inventing that move. And it's like, you don't want that. He did it. He was up fine and all that. But, you know, like, in the long run.
Hey, listen, do it once a year. Don't do a Cavernario and do it on every fucking show.
Well, Cavernario doesn't do it on every show either.
Well,
but
he doesn't anymore.
Yeah, no, he did.
He doesn't do much.
Even at the most, because I used to complain about him, he really did only save it to big matches. But, you know, he just did it Friday night again, too. So, if you're going to do it once a year, I guess that's all right. But I just have this feeling with Bandido in the sense that now he's got another one that he's going to do. You know what I mean? Because he does so many things. But when he does those press slams and everything, the one-arm press slam, that thing gets over so big. Those guys work together so well. And Kyle, after the show, was just like, basically like he watched all of Bandido's matches last year, all the big ones, and it was just like, man, I was just thinking, like, you know, what kind of a match could I have? And it was like, and then I finally had it. And he'd like to do it again, of course. But, you know, you always want to wrestle someone of that caliber. These guys are, man, they're top of the food chain for sure.
Oh, then we had the Bang Bang Gang and the Dogs double chain match. I thought this match sucked. And it really, honestly, it wasn't even mostly the fault of the wrestlers. It was the match. They were chained together.
The chains were too big or too long.
The chains were like, wrapped up in the chains. They kept getting stuck in the chains. The chains would get stuck in the ropes as they're trying to get in or out. All they can do is like lariats with the chain. It's just lariat over and over and over again. Hang them out to dry over and over again. It's like this match should have been much shorter, but they just kept going. Crowd's dead. They had the spot where I think Finley was going to give Jay like a dominator, and he gets caught in the chain and he slips and he just spiked this guy right on top of his head.
Yeah.
Jay looked like he was dead. The referee goes to check on him. They had a long conversation. Jay kicked out, thankfully. And then they start whipping everybody with chains, and then the Death Riders show up. And why it took them 20 minutes in a no DQ match, I don't know. So the Bang Bang Gang comes out to make the save, and then Marina takes a shillelagh. She has to sneak it to Finley, even though it's a no DQ match. I don't know why it has to be a snuck into the ring. And then, even though this thing's made of wood, and they've been hitting each other with steel chains, he clonks this guy with this piece of wood and pins him. Like, oh my God. I did not like this one bit. Not one bit. And the crowd was dead and pretty much sucked. No more chain matches. And they couldn't do blood. Top of everything else. So it was like...
They sure did blood in the Jericho match to make up for it.
Quintuple whammy of not good. Then we had the Maya World Hikaru Shida match. And it's another one. It went like 18 minutes or something like that. And the crowd was dead. And Hikaru Shida just got this boring 16, heat, did nothing.
16 and a half. I
16 just, and a half minutes.
Yeah.
Crowd didn't care at all. And then finally, they're going back and forth, and Shida hits a Falcon Arrow, which she didn't even sit down on. She just kind of dropped to a knee with this Falcon Arrow. And then Maya just countered, hit a bridging suplex, and pinned her. So the finish got a pop. That was at least good. But the match itself was not good. Two in a row.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the thing is I think that, obviously. Ever since the Maya World Mercedes match, they have booked Maya World like she's this woman with all this momentum and everything like that. On every TV, and not necessarily in every city, but most cities, it's like, in most of the matches have had no reaction. So it's like it may have been good at the end in San Jose, but sometimes it carries and sometimes it doesn't. And they booked it like they made her into this giant superstar right up to winning this championship. You know, it was very clear that they were building her to win this championship. And the reality is that the people weren't nearly as behind her as they thought that they were.
Well, the reality is, and she even said that the press conference, she claimed that the match with Mercedes made her, something like that. You know, the old, I was made in this defeat. No.
She wasn't.
That's not what happened.
She wasn't. I think everyone thought that night, that she was made. I mean, I got, texts, oh my God, they made a superstar. And I was in the building and it was like, I didn't think so. And then the TV the next Wednesday, it was like nothing. So it's like the people weren't ready for her. That's that. And this was another example. They just weren't ready for it. And
that was the issue with this match. I thought Hikaru Shida was terrible in this match.
Yeah, I didn't think she did nothing.
I think she did nothing for 14 minutes or something like that. It's like this went on forever. How could people get into the match? They weren't into it. They did pop when Maya won, so I can't say it's Maya's fault. I just think that Hikaru Shida was a terrible opponent.
They popped for a surprise title change. You know, it's not like they're sitting there the whole match going, let's go Maya, blah, blah, blah. We want to see this title change. It was like they weren't interested, and the match just wasn't over. That's all.
So we have two matches that were not good, and then we had Cage and Copeland versus Claudio and Pac, and their idea was to beat up Adam Copeland before the match and then get heat on Christian for the first 8 minutes or so. And after those first two matches, man, this was a bad idea. This crowd is dead. And they're beating on Cage. They're beating him. They're beating him. And Copeland's like spread eagle on the outside for like 8 minutes. They're beating on him. They're beating on him. And I think finally Christian was just like, what the fuck's going on here? Because he just decided he was just going to make a comeback. He made no tag. Just he sold for 8 minutes and then started making a comeback. And he starts beating the ass of both of these guys, and it totally turned the match around. Fans totally got into it. Then he tags in Copeland. Copeland makes a comeback. Now they're into it. And at that point, it became like a really good match. And
I liked it. I thought it was a really good match.
Finally, at the end, the Death Riders hit the corner-to-corner attack. But then Copeland and Cage switched it up, hit a combo spear, got the pin, retained the titles. And then we had the Young Bucks, Edge and Christian stare down, and they're going to Wembley for the tag team titles.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the thing is like, because of where they were going, and this is the case, look, it's the same thing as the case before WrestleMania. It's the big show. Everyone kind of knows where they're going already. So a lot of these matches, you kind of know what's happening. And in this one, it's like, you know, everybody knew that, that Claudio and Pac couldn't win the title. So it's tougher. But, you know, as far as the work goes, you know, I mean, Pac is fantastic. And so is Claudio. And, you know, it was a very good match. But, I mean, there was no, you know, no tension about the finish or anything like that. But, you know, I mean, people were into this stare down with the two teams. And it should be... In all, you know, the match should be something big. You know, it's like the one of the great tag teams of 25 years ago against, you know, one of the great tag teams of the last 15 years, you know, or the greatest tag team of the last 15 years. So in a sense, it's like this historical dream tag team match. So, you know, and this was just, and tonight was just about getting there.
And then we had the Painmaker and the Psycho Killer. And it's actually, it was a great match. They they opened it up, and it was like, at first, the first probably one-third of the match was just like all of the tropes that you see in these kinds of matches. There was a fire extinguisher, there was...
Well, I mean, it was all gimmicks. The whole match was gimmicks. It was all the stuff to be...
No, but early, my point is early, it was just your it was basically your WWE stuff. Fire extinguisher, chairs, it was all basic stuff.
There's a lot of blood.
You're getting ahead of it here. The first part of the match was all WWE tropes, but the people ate it up because, like, they just were ready for something. And then, after they went through that for a while, then they bring out the AEW hardcore gimmicks. So we've got barbed wire boards. We've got barbed wire tables. We got mirrors. We got mirrors wrapped in barbed wire. We got hockey pucks with tacks all over them. Then we have double juice. These dudes are bleeding all over the place. Then we got these crazy bumps.
Sandpaper.
Yep, whole thing. Yeah. So they're just doing all this crazy shit. And then finally, Jericho puts on an elbow pad covered in thumbtacks. He hits the Judas effect. Ciampa kicks out of that. Jericho grabs the drill, which Ciampa had brought into the ring, and allegedly drills a hole in Ciampa's head.
And he submits.
For the submission. Yes. And so, this was as advertised, a wild, brutal bloodbath, and the people loved it.
People liked the match. I will say that I thought it was a great match, but boy, did I not like this match in so many ways. I mean, I hate the drill. I hate the blood in this type of a match. I mean, it's a match they were going to do, and it got over and all that, but... Man, I do not like this style of wrestling at all. You know, it works for some people. It works in AEW. It was only one match on the show like this, so that was good. If there were five, I would really dislike it more. But I mean, nothing against those guys. They worked hard and good, but it's like. Like there's certain things like when you bring in a drill, it's like to me that's like all right, you so past the point of, and I don't want to use the term believability, but it's just like, come on.
Yeah, but there's a big difference here.
A drill.
He used it.
Yeah,
that was a finish. It's one thing if you bring in a gun, because you know no one's going to shoot the other guy with a gun.
But a drill.
But they brought a drill in and they used it.
Oh, but it's so stupid.
Hey, it's like a sledgehammer. It's stupid, but they use it.
I'm not a fan of sledgehammers. Whenever Triple H used a sledgehammer, I was always like, this is so stupid. Because it's like, if you actually hit the guy over the head with a sledgehammer, his head's going to split in two, and it's going to kill the guy. And it's like, you know, I'm not really into stuff that if it was real, you would die. And the drill is going to, you know. I mean, it's just like, there's no fantasy of anything with a drill. It just, I hated it. I hated it completely.
Then we had, oh my Lord, Foley and Divine Dominion.
I didn't really get that.
How did this make television?
Yeah, I didn't.
How?
I didn't get what they were going after here.
I don't think anyone did. I don't think Foley did.
Foley's there and is he barking like a dog or something?
Yeah, they told him to bark like a dog and he barked for 21 straight seconds. And then when it clearly was not working, it was like, guys, I think maybe it's time to go back to you.
Yeah, I mean, they were trying to, you know, they were pushing and you know, when it was over, and we've known this for months, but it is the Brawling Birds against Divine Dominion at Wembley. I mean, it's very clear they didn't announce it, but they all but announced it, and so that's good. That's a direction, and I don't know. Mick was good in the other segments that he was in the pre-show, but this one I did not really understand.
It sucked. It was weird. Yeah. Mark Davis Andrade for the national title. I thought this was a very good match, but this was another one that I don't think it needed to go as long as it did here.
I agree. Actually, I thought that they could have gone 4 minutes shorter.
I think they should have done an immediate finish because they teased it with Andrade hitting that immediate back elbow and going for the cover. I was like, they've never done that before.
That'd have been cool, actually.
And they should have done it one time, and this was the time.
Yeah, when he did that, I thought, you know what, if he pins him, it's okay. But, you know, they're into the thing, and it was a really good match. And, you know, I mean, look, Andrade's got his things that he has to do. So he's got to take pictures with the women, and he's, you know, it's just the Andrade act, which is so Soberano Jr., you know? It's like but it's working for him, and he looked good, and... You know, Mark Davis, man, you can't say enough for him. Guy's great. But yeah, it was a really well done pro wrestling match.
Had a very long match, and near the end, Andrade countered a pile driver and a Frankensteiner, sent Davis into the buckle. Moonsault over the post of the floor, double moonsault in the ring, removed the trousers, and then Davis tried a powerbomb. But Andrade cradled him, hit the back elbow again, hit the DM, got the pin, got the title, new national champion, and...
I wonder who's got... They didn't really tease someone for him to be feuding with next.
Well, we got plenty of time.
Well, he should be in a big match in Arena Mexico with that championship. I don't know. You know, I mean, I was thinking that they would set somebody up for that, and maybe they will Wednesday.
They better Wednesday.
Yeah,
no, that's the last chance.
Well... They have Saturday, or when I don't even know when is
God, I don't know.
Collision this week. I actually, because if they're going Saturday, they go head to head with SummerSlam, which at one point would have been the kiss of death. I mean, I think that the last time that you know they went against Saturday Night's Main Event just last week, and it was absolutely not the kiss of death.
That is quite different from SummerSlam.
I agree. So yeah. I mean, normally you would want. I thought that they have boxing on Saturday night too. So that would be the week you would be preempted anyway. So I think that it might be a. You know, I don't know. I'll have to look it up, but it might be a Thursday, which will make Thursday. Oh my God, another brutal Thursday.
We had the Mike Bailey promo for Mexico, then Tekla and Willow.
Mike Bailey in the press conference was really good. Willow was good. Mike Bailey was really good. I mean, it's just like he, you know, like everyone in the press conference, they're out there doing their gimmick. And I mean, if you're Tony Storm, it's kind of cool. I think that's what people want. But for a lot of people, when they do it, it's kind of like, You know, I don't know the, you know, I guess some reporters probably want it, but it's kind of, and Mike Bailey, man, he did not his gimmick. He went out there and he talked about how, he's so proud of Mike Bailey. I mean, of, Kevin Knight, and how Kevin Knight is going to be this and that, and just talked about, you know, how proud he was to be in Montreal, and just Kenny Omega's, you know, it's like he was just being, he was doing the interview that you would do when you're not doing your gimmick. And I thought he came off great. You know, just across the board on everything, you know, just, I was on, you know, I'm, you know, he was so happy to be on this card, but it, you know, I mean, he made it very clear him and Kevin Knight are, best friends, even though in storyline they are not. And you know, someday they'll get back together, and he just, you know, thought Kevin Knight did the greatest job in his match.
We had Tekla and Willow for the women's title, and it was kind of up and down in terms of the crowd. I mean, they really liked Willow. There were dueling chants here in this match, although there were points near the end where they were completely dead. And so Tekla tried to spear. Willow grabbed her, hid the doctor bomb. Sky Blue comes out right in front of the referee and puts the foot on the ropes. And
right in front of the referee. It was, yeah.
Willow goes after her, hits a doctor bomb on the floor, which looked like it sucked. Tekla spears Willow, goes for the stomp in the ring, but Willow avoids it and pins her with the old backslide to win the women's title.
I like that finish. I like that finish because it's usually not a finish, and people really pop for it. And, you know, I figured Willow would win. And, you know, it could have gone either way. If Tekla would have won, that would have been fine too. But, you know, I mean...
it was very clear for a long time that Willow and Mercedes is the match.
Yeah. I'm sure that's been planned long before Tekla actually got over as big as she did.
Well, then we had the main event, Kevin Knight and Kenny Omega for the AEW title, and they had a great match. Excellent main event. And
Kenny was unbelievably great in this match.
Yeah, and he was certainly the champion. They gave a lot to Kevin Knight, but this was not one of those matches where
it was abundantly clear
who the champion was when this
thing
was
over. He never came close. So this match was, it was not so much about making Kevin Knight pass the idea that he's in a great match in a pay-per-view main event. It was not about making you think that Kevin Knight's on the verge of winning the championship. This was about making Kenny Omega into this, you know, real world champion who is going to defend on the next big show. And there's nothing wrong with that either. But man, he, you know, he was great.
So the finish saw Omega try a top rope snapdragon. Kevin avoided it, hit the coast-to-coast dropkick. Goes to get the belt. Of course, the referee gets rid of one. Knight hits a uranaga into the other one. Nobody, I mean, they popped when Kenny kicked out, but nobody bought that as a finish. And then Kevin avoided the one-winged angel. And, and then ate the V-trigger. And then Omega hit a one-winged angel, got the pin. And so it was an excellent main event, but the big angle was afterwards. Death Riders come out to go after Kenny. Moxley and Marina start heading to the ring. Young Bucks run down to make the save. They get killed. Heels put the chair around Kenny's neck. Ospreay ends up running down, tells him to stop. So he says, Death Riders, get out of there. Wheeler tries to talk some sense into Ospreay, but then tells Claudia to break the guy's neck. But Ospreay breaks free, makes a save, clears the ring with a chair. Everyone's gone. Moxley then hits the ring. He's got his hands behind his back, begging off. And fans are chanting, do it, to Will. They want him to kill Moxley. Moxley ends up getting the chair from Will. Everybody boos. Moxley starts screaming at Will. He has to do this. Gets the old plastic bag. Gives it to Will. He wants Will to put the plastic bag on Kenny Omega's head. So Will teases for a long time doing it. But then he tears up the bag, drops Moxley with a forearm. All the Death Riders hit the ring. He tosses them all. Kills Pac with the hidden blade, and then grabs the belt and gives it to Kenny. So they go to corners, they start celebrating, and then Omega walks over, grabs Will, lays him out with the one-winged angel, and poses with the belt. The Bucks hit the ring. At first, they're kind of confused, but then they all end up posing as the show goes off the air. So my guess is that Kenny and the Bucks probably are going subtle heel so that we have at least the Bucks playing heel against Edge and Christian and Kenny playing heel against Will Ospreay. Like that's needed, but...
It isn't needed.
No, but they're going to do it.
It's not needed, but, you know, yeah, I think they don't want to do face versus face in those matches. And that's, I mean, you know, that... If you're going to do it, I mean, in the general rule, and obviously in the tag match you're not doing it, is you know, you make the fans, if it's babyface, you work the match and you work the angle to make the fans want to see a title change. So therefore, the champion is the one that plays the subtle heel, which they're doing in the Omega Ospreay, but not in the tag team title. Oh, we're ahead of ourselves. I mean, they haven't really pushed it that much in the tag team thing yet at all, really. It could do that, but it's not. That one's not a sure thing. But in this one, you know, yeah, Kenny is playing the Luthez world champion role, you know, going against the local babyface where he's the legend and he's the babyface. But, you know, you're rooting for your guy to win that championship, and that's the draw.
All righty. This coming Wednesday for Dynamite, they've announced the Conglomeration will be facing the Demand in a trios titles match.
Yeah,
so
I think
Roderick,
that should be...
Kyle, and Orange versus Ricochet, Bishop Khan, and Toa Leona.
I think they should do a title change there.
And that's the only match that we have thus far.
They're going to do a Willow Nightingale celebration. And I don't know of anything else off the top of my head. You know, I'm sure they'll do something with Omega and Ospreay. You know, whatever that will be.
All right, Arena Mexico.
Yeah, so Friday's show was the... well, at first they had Cavernario, who in fact did do the splash off the top rope to the floor, against Dragon Rojo Jr., and Dragon Rojo Jr. beat him by submission in the third fall, and Cavernario asked for a hair-versus-hair match at the anniversary show, and Dragon Rojo agreed. So the thing is, like, okay, so they have a bunch of feuds going on all at the same time. You know, the big one is Mystico and Averno, which one would think would be they're doing a mask versus hair. And then Cavernario and Dragon Rojo, hair versus hair. Star Jr. and Zondokan Jr., which would be hair versus mask. And I think there's one other one that they're doing as well. It's not quite as strong, and they're not going to do, unfortunately, they're not going to do four Apuestas matches, even on the anniversary show. They could do two. They're not going to do four. So I'm thinking that they may do that deal where they do, you know, like all four rivals do the tag team thing. They've done this in other years. And then the winning team, they face each other in their gimmick match. So it's like you have to earn your way to the main event of Arena Mexico. The problem with that is like they have spent so much time. They've already spent months on this Dragon Rojo Cavernario thing, and we still got, you know, till the middle of September. And it's like if that happens and they don't do that match, it's like that's a lot of buildup to not do it. And then but after the angle that they did, they got to do Mystico and Averno. I mean, that's the one that people want. And if they do that, you know, there was a time many, many, many years ago where it was everybody wanted, and they'd built it up for like months, Atlantis and Ultimo Guerrero, and also La Sombra and Volador Jr., La Sombra being Andrade. And they do the thing, and everybody... You know, it's just because of the build, and also because they're legendary guys. They well wanted Atlantis and Ultimo Guerrero, and they gave him Sombra and a Volador Jr. And I mean, and Sombra and Volador Jr. went out there, and they had like the most incredible match you could imagine. And the whole crowd is fraud, fraud, fraud. I mean, it was just like they had no chance. And it's like if they go in here and it's anyone but Mystico and Averno who wins. Like, the crowd's going to be pissed. And these guys have done a great job of not doing that, not pissing off their audience, you know, and their business is incredible because of it. So I don't know what they're going to do, but, yeah, so that's the deal. So the main event was the Leyenda de Plata elimination match, and I've only seen about the first 6 minutes of it, and I've had people tell me that it's like match of the year or a match of the year candidate. And from the 6 minutes I saw, I mean, it's like it didn't even start. Like it's like it started probably 4 minutes before it started. Like when the first two guys came out for their intros, and they're doing high spots and dives, and each guy comes in and he's doing high spots and dives, and it's not until all 10 guys are introduced that the match starts. But the match started during the introductions. Like they just, like they would introduce a guy and these other guys in the ring are just doing crazy stuff. And yeah, I mean, the whole thing is, it's just action, action, action. And it came down to Commander and Mascara Dorada, which is, so they're going to be main eventing for this coming Friday. And Commander and Mascara Dorada, man, they're going to have a killer match. I mean, I did see Mascara Dorada and Neon, and the people popped like crazy watching those two guys go against each other. And, you know, a lot of the combinations were really, really strong of what I saw. But from what I understand, like, you know, this was like a incredible, incredible match. And it looked it to me from what I saw.
All right, the G1.
Yeah, that's, I have been, you know, G1 was this weekend at Ota Gym. And I know that the Saturday show, I had some people who told me that this thing is just awesome, the Saturday show. So especially Yota Tsuji and Shingo Takagi. Let me just get my Saturday results. Where is it? Saturday is right here. Yeah, so the Saturday show, it was Great Okan and Hiroki Goto, with Great Okan winning. And Sonata beat Jake Lee via count out. I did not hear that these were great matches, but Takeshita and Oleg Bolton, people have said that that may be the best match of the tournament so far. Said to be just completely incredible. Yuto Ice and Ryohei Oiwa just beat the shit out of each other. They have a natural feud going. Heard that match was incredible. And then Tsuji and Shingo Takagi, I know people who said that that was a match of the year candidate. So they had like an absolutely killer last three matches. And then with let me just get the results there. It was Yota Tsuji beat Shingo Takagi with a Fire Blaster, which is the Gene Blaster, but twisting him around. Yuto Ice beat Oiwa, and Takeshita beat Bolton with a Raging Fire. Sonata beat Jake Lee countout. Okan beat Goto. And then today's show, what do I got here? Which I heard the main event was great. And that is, let me get that right here. Yeah, also at Ota War Gym. So it's B Block. Oscar beat Aaron Wolf via ref stoppage of win with a choke. Hanare beat Ren Narita. Drilla Maloney beat Callum Newman, which I would suspect was a great match. And then the match I was told was the best was Gabe Kidd beating Zack Sabre Jr. with the pile driver. So Zack has lost to Uemura, Callum Newman, and Gabe Kidd. So, you know, he could still come back and do something. I think he may start going on a win streak, because a guy of that caliber going, you know, losing three matches in a row, usually in a G1, means that he's going to do a great comeback. Yeah, so that's what's going on with G1.
All right, SAG and the Paramount WBD deal.
Yeah, I mean, no surprise, Screen Actors Guild has jumped in and basically supports the Attorney Generals, and they gave a statement on Saturday, I believe it was, and just basically saying that, you know, they're in full support, that they are against this, you know, this deal going through. It's going to be tough. It's a mess for Paramount. It's a mess. They promised, you know, if this deal doesn't go through, they promise $7 billion, and their whole company is worth like $9 billion. I mean, they can cover it, you know, and all that, but man, that is a business mess if they do not get this thing. And I don't know that it's going to be approved. I mean, I think that they're hoping that, you know, they're trying to get the court case to go as quick as possible. They pulled out of the fighting the injunction, basically knowing that they were going to lose. I mean, the judge had already given the temporary, and I think he was going to give the permanent, you know, where they couldn't do it until either the trial or June 1st, 2027. And they agreed to that by pulling out of this thing rather than get a second loss. But that means that you're going to have that thing starting in October where they have to pay, you know, $6.5 million a day to WBD for not completing the deal. So, you know, WBD is going to be getting a lot of revenue out of this. But that's a lot of money to be spending. Especially if that deal doesn't go through. And there is certainly, you know, opposition and the attorney generals. I had read somewhere that you know, the whole thing was, you know, originally the big thing was about CNN. That's the reason they paid so much. That's the reason there's all these court fights, even though they're claiming other things in all cases. But I had read somewhere that they did actually, Paramount, because they're so deep in this right now, that they did offer not taking CNN, and the attorney generals were just like, that's not good enough. So it's like, now you're kind of up shit creek. It's like, you try to settle, they think they have so much leverage, and they just don't want the whole thing through for the, you know, their big argument wasn't CNN. Their big argument was the movie business, because that's a better argument for court. And, you know, but that the CNN thing was the real crux of it. But now it's going to take more than that. So it's a real tough deal right now for Paramount.
All right. Nico Ali Walsh.
Yeah, so big thing today. So Nico Ali Walsh was probably the, not probably, he was the, in the hearing before the House of Representatives on the revived Ali Act, Nico Ali Walsh was very, he's the son of, the grandson of Muhammad Ali. And he was the one who basically was saying that my grandfather would have hated this act. He would have, you know, he would have been completely against it. If you want to pass it, please take my grandfather's name off of it. Now, his Ali's wife was convinced to be supportive of this act, but you know, he just he'd been negative. And in the last couple of months, so it passed the House easily. It stalled in the Senate so far, and it looked like it's not going to have traction there for a number of reasons. Because now, originally it was bipartisan, everybody just wanted to pass it. Now, I think because of the White House show and the nature of the White House show being so clearly partisan, that the Democrats were just kind of like, do we really want to pass this thing, like just rubber stamp this thing? We maybe should read this. And Nico Ali Walsh had been talking to senators, you know, basically saying, you know, do not pass this thing. Here's all the problems. And there are problems there that everybody overlooked in the House. And in the Senate, they're not so much overlooking now. So anyway, Nick Kahn brought in Nico Ali Walsh, I guess, and met with him yesterday. And they put Nico Ali Walsh on today's, they had the big Zuffa boxing show from the theater in the Infosys Theater, Madison Square Garden, their first big attempt at a live show. And, you know, like, they did not sell a lot of tickets, but they did paper, and it was packed, and it was a, from what I gather, it was a very good show. But Joe Tessitore's out there, and he calls in Nico Ali Walsh, you know, and it's, you know, it's total, you know, it's Zuffa. It's, everything's like planned and scripted. And basically Nico Ali Walsh goes that I'm not here for Zuffa boxing. I'm here for the best interest of the fighters, and I will always be here for the best interest of the fighters. And Joe was calm, you know, he didn't like panic or anything, you know. I mean, obviously it's not what they wanted him to say. It was something, you know, on a, you know, a Zuffa TV show, when somebody says that, it was fascinating. I know a lot of people, when they saw the pictures of Nick with Nico, they're going like, oh my God, you know, they got Nico to sell out or whatever. And you know, I don't know what the discussion was. I'm sure they had a very amicable discussion. Nico has his points that he's not going to waver from, and those are probably the points that they want. So I don't know how this all turns out, but, you know, I mean, to their credit, to Nikon's credit, you know, instead of just trying to turn this thing into a personal fight, he trying to become friends with the guy. And so that's where it stands right now. And it's better to be, you know, the guy is, he is the grandson of Ali. The act bears Ali's name. Having the grandson so negative about it is not good for business or passing the bill. And so Nick, you know, I mean, Nick did the business like thing. And maybe, you know, maybe it'll be the best for all concerned, because they will compromise, and the compromise may not be so one-sided. And like Zuffa Boxing, you know, originally, like, they weren't going to work with sanctioning bodies, you know, over world titles. They are, in fact, doing so, you know, because their fighters want world championships. You know, Zuffa wants to just throw out all these and don't work with them and create your own world championships, which legally right now they can't do yet. So for now, you know, and not work with other promoters. In fact, they are working with other promoters, because to get the big fights, there's big, you know, there's top name boxers with other promotions that people want the big fights with. So to get Ryan Garcia, you got to work with Oscar De La Hoya. You have to. And they are very, you know, at first, you know, Zuffa Boxing was going to, for the most part, it was going to be self-contained. The idea was to be like UFC, like WWE. And that was not viable right now. I mean, obviously, in the long run, in 3-4 years, I mean, that's certainly what they want. Certainly, they want to be able to do that and take, you know, the big thing on this is to do this, because right now the cost of top tier boxers is so high that they can't make the kind of profits with top tier boxers that they make with their wrestlers and they make with their UFC fighters. So they want to be able to control boxing to where they can, you know, keep the money down and make those profits in the boxing realm. They don't have to do it right now because Turkey's supplying all the money for them. But in the long run, you know, that's obviously the goal. And they rewrote that Ali Act to give them the power to create their own world championships, to have a roster, you know, a roster that can basically, you know, the things that would be illegal, you know, like not allowing people from other companies to challenge for your championships. The new revised Ali Act would have given them the legal power to do that. And obviously some people, you know, that read that and everything, and Nico Ali Walsh being one of the key people, it's like, you know, he saw the red flags that we all see, and we all know where this is going, in the long run. I mean, right now, you know, right now they're actually paying great money because they have to get into the game, and just to get the services of the big fighters. You gotta overpay when you're the new guy, and they're not doing it with their own money. They're doing it with Turkey's money, but Turkey's, you know, Turkey's the financier of the company anyway. So it's just like that's why they're in business with them. So anyway, that's the situation. So I don't know how this is all going to turn out, but it was very fascinating that Nico met with Nick and that they put Nico on their show tonight, which was even more fascinating. And he was on the show and he clearly did not say what I think they were hoping that he would say, oh, we're negotiating and this and that. And he was very adamant that I am not here for Zuffa Boxing. I am here for the betterment of the fighters themselves.
All right, before we go, we got Raw coming up tomorrow night. And the full lineup is Sol Ruka and Raquel for the Intercontinental title. The Vision faces Alpha Academy. Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins have another face-to-face. Obafemi and Brock Lesnar will have a weigh-in hosted by Triple H.
Yeah.
A weigh-in for a fight with no weight limits. Always a classic. Joe Hendry and Danhausen do a concert. Javon Evans versus Rusev. and Rey Mysterio versus Ethan Page. So we've currently got 10 matches for SummerSlam. So that could be the whole card if they do five-match shows.
I mean, God, I can't. I'd be surprised. I think they might do sixes, though. I could see them doing sixes.
Well, we got Gunther and Nick Aldis. Did you watch SmackDown?
No, I did not get a chance. I'm watching in the morning.
I have to say that when I first heard Gunther and Nick Aldis, I was like, God damn. Gunther, all this guy has done, the career killer, and he's wrestling. Nothing against Nick Aldis, but it is Gunther against a GM at SummerSlam.
Yeah,
I was like, Nick, what are they doing with this guy? But hold on.
Nick's a great
hold
promo,
on,
though.
Hold on. Yeah. I watched this show. They did a hell of a job.
Yeah, Nick's a great promo.
He is a great promo, and they built this up as a really big match because they actually acknowledged that Nick Aldis is a former NWA World Heavyweight Champion.
They did not acknowledge he was a TNA champion.
They did not.
That is amazing when you think about it because, for number one, NWA is a much smaller promotion than TNA. Number two, they're supposed to be partners with TNA. They're not, I mean, they have a working agreement with NWA. They let, you know, Natty go there and all, but it's not like they have, like, the tentacles in like they do with TNA. So, and they, you know, things like that are not done by accident. So there is some story there on why they made that decision. I actually probably ask about that. Why'd you make the decision to acknowledge NWA but not TNA? That's an interesting one.
Well, yeah. So they did a hell of a job making that seem like a really big match. So I got to give them credit for that because I did not care when I first heard about that, but they made me interested.
That stuff, you know, that stuff usually works though. So I mean, when I first heard about it, it's like, you know, I wasn't a fan of it either. In a sense, but I'm not a fan of it, not because of Gunther, but because I just thought that Nick Aldis is doing a good job as GM. And then once you put him in the ring, then it becomes, you know, too much of a gimmick. And then he's a heel GM or he's a babyface GM. And I think he should just be a GM. I think it like makes the job, you know, it.
Well, they made it clear that once he signed the contract, he's no longer GM.
Yeah, yeah.
He's out.
Yeah.
So I guess he's a wrestler for a while. We have Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. We got CM Punk and Cody Rhodes. They had a very good segment on SmackDown. Very good back and forth. We have Brock Lesnar, Obafemi, Hell in a Cell, Liv Morgan, Io Sky, Penta and Chad Gable in Chad's hometown. We have a number one contenders match for the WWE title. And it's Sami Zayn and Finn Balor.
Mm-hmm.
So the winner of that match will get a shot against the Punk Cody Rhodes winner. We got Dominik and Danhausen. We have got LA Knight, Solo, and Royce Keyes versus Jacob Fatu and the Usos. And we have the ladder match, which, by the way, the booking of this on SmackDown was so fucking stupid. So last week, they had Charlotte Flair and Nia Jax, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Jade Cargill's crew runs in. They screw Nia Jax. They actually attack Charlotte, so Charlotte won via DQ. Nia got screwed. So Nia goes to Adam Pearce, and she's like, this is bullshit. I got screwed out of this match. So Adam Pearce goes, all right, next week you guys are going to rematch. Same match, winner goes to the ladder match. They do the rematch. The same fucking thing happened. Jade and her crew run in. They attack Charlotte. Nia's DQ'd, and the match ends, and they're like, well, Charlotte's in the ladder match now. Stupid. So anyway, it's Jade Cargill, Tiffany Stratton, Chelsea Green, and Charlotte Flair. And then a TBA, which I don't know. Maybe it'll be Nia Jax, but they sure iced her out on that show. So that was kind of dumb. But anyway, that's the SummerSlam lineup, and we'll know more after Raw on Monday night. So Dave and I are going to wrap it up. Dave and Garrett, we're up on Friday. New Observer's up. We'll be back tomorrow night as well. And lots to talk about. So check out the front page for all the news, and we'll talk to you again after a while.